Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Bars, the Black Atheist Radio Show. I am Rashad Blazer Pete, and joining with me this evening is Khalil Haynes. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Rashad? Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Glad to have you on. Should
Excellent.
Be joined by Brother Smith and a few here. Today we're going to talk about misogyny, which is a very wide-ranging topic. It affects a lot of things in our society. Pay and employment, discrimination, domestic violence, sexual assault, even perception of women in leadership positions. There's a lot to discuss.
Right. One note, I don't know if Heather is going to be able to make it in tonight to call in. She's traveling, and I don't know if she's in a spot to be able to dial in.
Very well. So, domestic violence. SafeHorizon.org says that one in four women will experience domestic violence during their lifetime, which is a very sobering statistic to find there. That's 25%. So,
it's unbelievable. You know, it's funny. I grew up in a fairly challenging domestic violence situation. It was really odd for me. It's funny. I never forget growing up as a kid. I'm the type of person who's really self-taught in most things. I prefer to research on my own and find out my own information. And I remember as a child wondering, I was actually researching, trying to figure out where in history or what event in history caused everyone to hate women so much. You know, I just didn't understand it. It didn't make any sense.
Right.
Like from the left and the right, everything you saw was like women were lesser, women were held back, you know, from descriptions of Asian societies where the women were required to walk a certain amount of distance behind the men to the Muslim societies. I mean, even before I really recognized it here at home, you know, again, I was young. It just was so confusing. I didn't understand why there was such a difference. And so, you know, growing up, it almost, you know, early on, it's like society makes it seem right in some way, like, you know, as if women deserve the treatment they get. And I was so happy as I got older and I learned what a patriarchy is and I began to understand the dynamic between men and women and, you know, how relationships work. And it's just, you know, it's just a sad situation. I took both my parents to the hospital as a child to recover from attacks on one another. It was just so tough to wrap my head around where all the violence comes from, where all the anger comes from. You know, in all these years, I still haven't gotten a good answer, but it's ingrained in society at a very deep level. I don't know if most men even recognize just how bad it is, just what sort of, you know, fear that a lot of women walk around in our society, you know, kind of fighting. And it's a sad situation. Sometimes I look at my fellow men and I just kind of shake my head. I don't even know if there's a solution sometimes.
Yeah, it's a very stark reality, and I feel like it's like tip of the iceberg as a man seeing so many accounts of experiences and reading up on statistics and articles and just listening to podcasts and watching videos on the subject. I feel like the more I learn, the more that there is to be learned.
Right.
And I was just reading earlier about street harassment, and it's pretty bad. Like I know a lot of people that are probably listening right now. I've seen that video where the woman walked around all day in New York, and there was a lot of, you know, whistling and comments, and there was even a guy who followed her for, like, what, 5 minutes? Like, five whole minutes just followed her. And I came upon the site stopstreetharassment.org, and it turns out that that's pretty damn common. They've had studies that they've looked into and compiled metadata, and it's turning out that upwards of nearly 80% of women have experienced being followed while walking down the street, or having their path blocked, or more than half have experienced being touched or grabbed, and about 35% have actually experienced being a target of public masturbation, which I thought was crazy.
It's insane.
And about 30% have experienced full-on physical assault, which is, it's crazy. It just kind of brings numbers to our privilege as men.
Right.
And, you know, I can't honestly think of a single day where I have had to walk down the street and worried about being followed, or, you know, turning around the corner and there's a guy standing in front of me, flashing me or masturbating, or might just jump on me, for, you know, for not giving them the time of day. I don't have to worry about those things as a man.
Of course.
Looking at all of this, and I can't say that my enlightenment, so to speak, on women's issues has been as long as yours, but definitely it leaves you wondering, what can I do? What can I say? What can I do to be an example of, you know, how we should treat women in our society today? Because definitely, you know, cursing at them for not, you know, giving them, for not getting their number from them is definitely not it. And it most certainly isn't attacking them or whooping out your genitalia.
Right. I know for me, it's actually funny that you mentioned that those statistics. Not funny, but, you know, I actually, if I'm walking down the street or I turn a corner and I realize that I'm the only person, I'm a man on a block, and there's a woman or women and it's just us on the street, I'll cross the street. I'll turn the other way. I'll try my best not to seem aggressive in any way, not to even give them the idea that I'm stalking them or that I'm trying to get up close to them or anything like that. Just through the realization, you know, I have, you know, mostly in my family, the people that we get to interact with on a daily basis are women, you know, my mom, my aunt, my sisters, my daughters. So I'm very, very cognizant of that idea of, hey, I turned this corner, here's some guy who turned the corner right behind me, and now for the past two blocks, he's following me or he's getting close or he's trying to make some sort of an approach. It's so unbelievably scary, the idea, you know, 30% of women have been actually physically, I mean, 30% of women assaulted, absolutely horrendous. That 35% of women who've been physically touched, I mean, I can't even imagine someone putting their hands on it. It's not even something I even consider as I walk down the street. I was able to, you know, well, can't see me on radio, probably for the best. But I'm a big guy. I'm over 6 feet tall. Generally, I have a type of bearing about me where, people just don't approach me even in positive ways, much less negative ways. So it's hard for me to actually put myself in their shoes, but I just imagine what that must feel like as, step out into the street and you can't just enjoy being out because you always have to kind of keep your eyes open for what might be around you. And then the other number that you mentioned that really is something that I've been trying to make kind of my personal crusade, that 80% number where 80% of women have had some untoward approach by a man as they're just kind of out, minding their business. I never forget, I talked to a couple of feminists over the past few months, and I didn't ask them directly, but I kept noticing that when we would talk about misogyny, they would relate it often to racism and how the misogyny that they felt, especially from men of color, was so similar to the, not even the overall oppression that they felt from whites, but you know how we talk about as people of color, those microaggressions, those
Right.
small things that kind of add up during the day. And that's what that
Right.
80% number really, kind of pounds home for me that, even if you're not being assaulted, even if you're not being touched, it's still a constant battle to even just go out the house and enjoy your day because you never know what sort of creep is going to decide to, mention some body part or suggest some activity, and he doesn't even know you. He doesn't even have any sort of context for communicating with you. And that's something I think that, just in our conversations with other men and our interactions with other people, that's something we can definitely kind of say, hey, what made you say that? And you don't know her. Why are you, just kind of put a bug in people's ear to see if we can start to turn the tide of that just constant overall pressure just from being in society. I mean, we've got to figure out something. It's a challenging problem, but I mean, the status quo is unacceptable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've started to notice a lot of that, a lot more. As I've said before, I'm currently in the military at least for the next 4 months, and it's pretty bad there. Like, as it's been reported in the news, the Secretary of Defense has opened up all combat positions to women. And of course, the next day after that came out, I went into work and had to hear about how women are unfit and they'll go out into combat and get emotional and somehow screw it up for the entire unit, which I find ironic because most times I hear it's the biggest guys who talk the most trash who end up doing the very same thing. So,
Figures.
and or I've had to watch a Marine staff sergeant, a woman, take the time out to sit all of her fellow women Marines down that she is instructing and say, look, this is the reality of being a woman in the Marine Corps, and nothing's positive about it. She says the same thing that's said about a lot of women in the private sector when they do well in advance. They say the same thing. Oh, she must be sleeping with the big cheese, or she's probably sucking up to somebody in a position of power, or she just probably walks in there and shows a little leg or a little bit of cleavage and she gets what she wants. And I find it baffling that for a lot of men in general, not just in the military, but in general, they find it inconceivable to think that a woman would actually get ahead based upon her own merit, her hard work, her skill, her ability to get the job done. And I try my best to squash that whenever I start to hear it come up. And I'll hopefully that I get through, and hopefully I make it less, well, I contribute to making the environment less hostile. I
right.
sincerely hope that. And it's just terrible to see, when, especially when I know them personally and I talk to them on the regular, and I see that they actually are good at their job, and then I have to go sit down with someone else and, you know, just like water cooler talk, and it's, they didn't do it. They had to suck up to someone. They had to, whatever they've earned, they didn't do it honest, you know.
All right.
And I think religion contributes to that a lot too. I mean, we know that a lot of religions kind of paint women as in some cases downright adversarial towards men. And for example, you know, the story of creation in the Bible, and you have Eve being tempted, and then she in turn convinces Adam. And I'm pretty sure you have too. You've heard men who point to that and say that's where it all started. That's why women are all nothing but trouble.
Right. I mean, when I was relating earlier about, you know, my experiences as a child, that's really where it began. I was lucky that I wasn't raised in any religion, but at the same time, my father always encouraged us to read about religion because he, you know, recognized what an important part they played in society. He wanted us to be, you know, conversant in the, you know, the various faiths that existed in the world. And when you study it, you realize that there was a switchover. If you look at the early faiths, the early religions, they were all matriarchal. They were all centered around a woman force, if you will, that was a creative force and a nurturing force. And it's kind of the story of, you know, how humans were able to survive their early days because of the Mother Earth, if you will, or Gaia, you know, a bunch of names that they have given that idea over the years, was a protector, you know, was a kind of the hearth around which humanity was able to grow. And all of a sudden, you, especially with the Abrahamic religions, you know, Christianity, Islam, where you just saw all these stories where they completely flipped it around, where all of a sudden women were secondary. They were the reason for evil. They were in various stories, like with Jezebel and other stories, similar stories in various books of faith, where they were the reason why men who are otherwise good would fail. It was just a constant, it was like a whiny type tone, where you can imagine some old decrepit, or a group of old decrepit men who have been hurt by women in the past, just kind of sat down and poured out all their troubles into an ink and papyrus to kind of establish, I guess at the time, I don't know if they could have realized the impact it would have had, but all of the other, you know, hurt men and patriarchal society leaders kind of just hopped on it, like, oh yes, this is exactly what we needed as an excuse, if you will, to, I guess you can't call it anything else but hate. For a time, you know, as I was studying it, I thought maybe it was fear, where, like I said, I was wondering, like, was there a time where, you know, women were just so powerful that they scared the hell out of men so that, you know, men are afraid to let them be themselves, afraid to let them have power? But I couldn't find anything, you know, to any event or any series of events that would have led to the state that we have in today's societies, where almost across the board, you know, really around the world, you know, women just don't have the respect they deserve. They're just not treated as human beings in a lot of cases. And there's no explanation for it. The other point you made, I wanted to address really quickly, because I was thinking about it earlier today as I was doing some prep for the show. You know, when we as men get together, and there are a couple of, you know, other guys that I talk to about this subject, and we always come to the point of, you know, well, what can we do? How can we begin to address it? And I realized one of the problems we have with, you know, as men being able to address, well, especially me, I'm not sure really how all, you know, maybe a majority of men have this situation, but with me, I refuse to be around people who think like that. I don't have any friends who treat women badly. I mean, I know people who treat women badly. I don't call them friends. I don't spend time with them. They don't come to my house, which is filled with women. You know, we don't go out together. We don't hang out together. I might see them in a social situation. I'm not going to run home. But other than that, I really don't spend a lot of time around misogynist men. So I really don't get a chance to share these sorts of messages. I really don't get a chance to call people on the crap that they pull, because I rarely see it on purpose. I kind of stay away from it. And I realize that's a problem. You know, we have to try to find, I think, these guys and you know, kind of shine a light on them and say, hey, can you explain yourself? Can you describe, you know, what you were thinking as you decided to call this woman out of her name just because she was, you know, doing whatever she was doing. She's just walking down the street, no requirement to interact with you. But because she decided not to, she's all sorts of derogatory terms and, you know, sometimes even, like you say, physical threats made against her person. Right. I mean, we need to find some way to shine a light on it like they do with roaches. I mean, you know, get them to scatter that same idea. I think if we can kind of bring it to the forefront somehow and cause people to take a hard look at the stuff they say and the things they do, maybe we can get some traction. But we got to be out there. We got to be in the middle of it. We got to find those areas or maybe create them.
Yeah, maybe there could be a show about that. They have To Catch a Predator with Chris Hansen. You know, maybe To Catch a Catcaller.
You know? Exactly.
Just set up a camera on the street and wait for it to happen, and you know, somebody jumps out and they go, hey, you know, why'd you just do that to her? And you know, maybe play it back to them if they, because I'm pretty sure they'll try and play like they didn't really do anything wrong. Play it back to them and let them see how they look. Or maybe, you know, track them down and play it to other women and see what they say about it.
Right.
And record that and then play that back for them. And let them see how the women who have to experience this feel about it. I mean, obviously there won't be 100% conversion rate on that, but I think it might change some minds.
I think that's an excellent idea. That you know, exactly what I was talking about, just right then when it happens, especially, say, hey, let's go ahead and deconstruct that behavior, you know, for the world to see. I think that would be excellent if we could find some way to pull that together.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe ABC also has the series, you know, the What Would You Do series that they do with 2020. And they, you know, have actors come in and they stage the situation and you know, just kind of shine a light on bystanders and go, hey, you know, why don't you take the opportunity to jump in and say something? Because, you know, playing this footage back, you look pretty uncomfortable seeing it happen. And
right.
Just encourage bystander intervention.
Absolutely. I think that would definitely at least be a start, you know, even obviously it would be great if for the person we would address, if we could get them to change their behavior, but also just the idea of showing people that, yes, a light is being shined on this. At any moment, you don't know, as you catcall a woman or approach a woman improperly, someone might actually tap you on the shoulder with a camera in your face and ask you to explain your behavior. Just maybe that little extra bit of concern, kind of similar to, I'm sure, what has happened with the To Catch a Predator series, where, you know, we, you know, let them know that, yeah, there are men out here who are on top of it. I know I'm in a couple of Facebook groups with other men looking to combat misogyny. And one of the things I noticed, kind of similar to what I was just saying, is that, well, all of the men that are in the group are already aware of their privilege and the role that the effect that misogyny has in our society, especially as people of color. So it's a kind of a little bit of preaching to the choir in a lot of these groups and a lot of these areas. You've got to, you know, as you say, find a way to get that message out into the street, to get that message in front of people who wouldn't have joined that sort of a group, especially, you know, the extremists like men's rights activists, who I think are a very dangerous group that really need to be addressed and, you know, in some significant way, because some of the comments and some of the things you hear from some of those extreme parts of the spectrum are really pretty scary. Really pretty scary. I don't know if you remember a few months ago, I certainly don't remember his name, but there was a young guy who went on a little bit of a shooting spree because a woman or a couple of women that he wanted to approach refused to respond to him. You know, so it's a real danger out there. It's a serious situation. And we have to be proactive. We have to, you know, match their intensity with our own intensity and find a way to start to push back against some of this really deeply ingrained behavior. It's a tough nut to crack, though.
Yeah, that person you were mentioning there is Elliot Roger, who killed 6 people and injured 14 near UCal Santa Barbara.
Wow. And I believe he was a part of a men's rights organization, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was very active on MRA message boards. And actually announced his intent on the message board and left a YouTube video just the day before.
Wow. And if I'm not mistaken, they were cheering him on in those groups, aren't they?
Yeah, there was a very small minority that actually said, hey, maybe you're taking this too far. But the rest were happy about this, and that's terrible. It just goes to show how deeply ingrained into the male psyche that one is entitled to romantic attention from women. Like, this guy felt like he was being done a disservice, an injustice even, that to the point that of which he felt like taking lives was somehow justified.
Right.
And
I think a lot. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And oddly enough, well, not oddly enough, coincidentally, he also not only, you know, in his manifesto, if you will, he also had contempt for women of color and interracial couples. So again, it's just going to show how white supremacy and a lot of bigoted ideologies intertwine quite a bit.
Absolutely. Also, I think, and you mentioned earlier about religion, I think kind of this almost Victorian attitude, especially here in the States, that you had over for decades, where women were expected to be chaste and or expected to be reserved and, you know, not dress a certain way, not be open about their sexuality. It kind of added this sense of mystery around women, where I've actually heard men lament the fact that a woman has a right to decide who she has sex with. Like, they actually say it's not fair that they feel like the woman has control over their sexuality, over their ability to express, you know, or over a man's ability to express himself sexually, just by their ability to say no. And I feel like a lot of that came from this idea, you know, especially from the turn of the century on up into the 40s and 50s, up until the really kind of sexual revolution of the 60s, where it was this idea where, you know, they put a woman's sexuality up on a pedestal, and that position, which was incorrect, you know, women are human just like men. They have the same sexual drives and the same desires that men do. That idea of putting it, you know, kind of tying it up in a box and putting it away on a shelf and saying not available to you unless, you know, the society or your family or other people agree that you guys should be together or what have you. I think that kind of skewed the way a lot of men at the time who were growing up, who were going through puberty, it skewed the way they thought about women. They view women as objects because they were in many ways taught to view women as, you know, an object that's sitting on the shelf for you to kind of receive as a reward for your good behavior in society, as opposed to, you know, you two being equals and being able to approach each other as equals and being able to explore your sexuality without it meaning anything, without it being a negative on her or being some sort of conquest, you know, for you as a man. They romanticized this idea of chasing women to make it, you know, almost like a hunt, a grand game that, you know, it was almost a rite of manhood. And I'm sure you've experienced the same thing growing up where, you know, did you have sex yet? What, you know, what did you get her to do? And, you know, was she available to you? And these sorts of ideas are just become so common that they're second nature. I don't think most men ever think twice about how wrong that is to even have that sort of thought in your head. But it's, you know, like we said, it's just so deeply ingrained. It's hard to know where to even begin to attack it. You have racism, you have religion, you have issues of inadequacy that a lot of men feel, you know, as far as their ability to perform sexually and concern about that. It's a lot of a peer pressure that goes into it. And it just seems like such a huge problem that as you stand, you know, to the side and you feel confident, you feel at least somewhat strong in your own beliefs, I sometimes look at, you know, guys, I don't know where I would even begin the conversation.
Right. And to touch on that, the what we learned growing up, personally, my the talk, as people like to put it, was don't bring home the babies. That's all I got. You better not bring home no babies because I'm not helping you take care of. And for my sisters, it's a lot different. I mean, of course, they got don't come home with a baby, but it was, you know, don't be running around here like a fast-ass little girl, you know.
Or,
you know, don't be laying down with every Dick and Harry you meet. And I feel like that would probably, I mean, not being a woman, I feel like being a woman, a young woman, you know, going through puberty and teenage years, that has to be confusing, probably maybe even drive them crazy, because on one end you're told that, you know, you can't have sex with too many guys, and then on the other hand, if you have a boyfriend or someone that you're attracted to, there's some guy, some man in his life telling him, set him up and knock him down. Get as many as you can. Is it, you know, almost like collecting, in a sense, the sexual encounters. And it's not just, even with sex, it's just how you act. You know, you can't dress too revealing because that's, you know, slutty. Or if you dress, you cover up too much, then you're prude. And the same thing with behavior. You know, you have sex with too many guys, you're a slut. You don't have too many sexual encounters, you're a prude. And then you have to use protection, but then the guys are all over here saying it doesn't feel good as good if I wear protection. Or my personal favorite, it doesn't fit, even though we have... There's a series of videos. A lot of people have been doing it just goofing off, but what they don't realize is that it was started as an awareness campaign to show that these things are made for this stuff. But people are filling condoms with water and dropping them on people's heads. And in some of these videos, the condom isn't breaking. It's literally sitting on the head. Somebody has to walk up and actually break the condom to fall off of the head. So you got all of that going on, and then if they do have unprotected sex, now they can't have the Plan B pill because life starts from conception, and that's basically abortion. But at the same time, they have the kid, and they're not able to take care of the kid financially. It's, well, you shouldn't have had kids. And so it seems from the outside, it feels like women have a life that they live where they are damned if they do and damned if they don't. They're wrong in somebody's eyes, no matter what they do. And quite frankly, my personal position on that is any women that are out there listening, just do what you want. Do what you want, because you're going to be wrong in somebody's eyes anyway. And I think that people will respect anyone more in any situation, regardless of what's going on. When you do something and they say that they don't like it, you just basically flip the bird and you go, so, it's my life. And they'll respect you more for it. They might not like what you're doing, but you got to respect it at the very least. And it just speaks to the privilege that we have as men to, we can go out and have as many sexual encounters as we want. We can walk around topless and no one will say anything. I mean, we might not get service if we walk into a particular place of business. But at the very least, we can walk down the street or go for a jog shirtless. And not have any challenge, no questions. Definitely no criminal record will come of that. And just overall, our behavior isn't nearly as policed as it is for women.
Not even close. I mean, you made a good point earlier. Women, they receive so many mixed messages. One of my biggest pet peeves is, and hopefully, I can't really say I'm as aware now. Hopefully, it's not a message that's still being sent. But I know, especially in previous decades, there is this huge idea around women, kind of fed to even young girls, that part of your success is being someone's wife, is finding that one person that you are allowed, you know, to spend your life with, or to, you know, kind of, I mean, they refer to it more of a partnership now, but, you know, it's a patriarchal society. It still ends up being a unbalanced relationship, and women are told that they have to get this to happen. Meanwhile, if they actually do the sorts of things that would lead to relationships, you know, they have all of these, well, you're not supposed to do that, you're not supposed to dress this way, you're not supposed to, you know, even things like, you know, being the first person to, you know, to ask, you know, to have a woman ask a man out instead of the other way around, or to be the one who, you know, calls a man instead of the man calling the woman. You know, I know other women that will tell, you know, their fellow women to, that this is not acceptable behavior. You shouldn't call a man first. You shouldn't ask a man to dance. You shouldn't, you know, ask a man to go out. And it just kind of, again, reinforces this, well, we're going to tell you to do one thing, but if you actually try to do it, we have all these other rules that you have to kind of jump through and balance. And as you said, I can imagine how it must, especially for young girls going through puberty, how it can be hard to just figure out what it is you're actually supposed to do in this life, you know, what, you know, makes you an acceptable woman to society. And I like what you just said, you know, flip them the bird. Tell them there is no such thing as an acceptable woman to society. I'm a woman. I do what I want, just like men do what they want. And if we could get to that, that would be a great day.
It'd be a wonderful day.
Absolutely. I know for my daughters, I've never, ever mentioned to them anything about marriage or husbands or wedding. I've spent the entire time, you know, helping to make them the best human beings they can be. I assume they understand what marriage is. You know, they know that marriage exists, and if they feel it's something they want to do, I'm all for it. You know, I'm not a big believer in marriage myself, but absolutely, you know, I support them whatever they decide to do. But I refuse to be a part of this. Hey, it's your job to get married. It's your job to find some man to, you know, be there for and help, and not even so much as a partnership, but just, you know, be this man's wife instead of, you know, life partner, or, you know, you guys being even going into the relationship as equal. And, you know, you see these wedding shows and wedding reality shows. They really kind of really soup it up, and they make it seem like a, you know, that wedding day to be such a special event. I'm sure it's a great day, but overall, life partner, you know, finding someone to spend the next 30, 40, 50 years with is not something you do in one day. It's not a decision that you can even prepare for. It's not something that you can say, okay, I've done the things that I need to do to have a 50-year relationship. That's going to happen, you know, as you're having a relationship. You'll know whether it's going to last as you're into it. So this whole idea of all of these requirements for a woman to be a woman or for a woman to be accepted, it really turns me off, and I refuse to have, you know, to even have that be a topic of our conversation. You know, if one of my daughters asked me, I would definitely discuss it with them, but I'm glad they're focused on school. My youngest daughter just got an A+ in pre-calc. So, you know, that's the type of thing I like to see women focus on. You know, not all of this, hey, I'm chasing a relationship, but hey, I'm 30 and I'm not married, so there's something wrong with me. That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. And like you were saying, marriage is looked at like, a wedding is looked at like this special event. And I mean, in a way it is. It's the start of a new life for two people. But
right.
It's also looked at it as it's an achievement.
Right.
And sure, it's a goal that some aspire to. Personally, it was one that I aspired to. But then you also have that, you know, when somebody is 30, 35, 40, 45, and they're not married, then especially with women, they start to look at them as though, okay, what's going on here? There's something wrong with you. What are you not doing to land you a husband? Now, on the flip side, you have a man who is 30, 35, 40, 45, and he's still a player. He's OG. And no one's looking at him like, okay, what's wrong with him? Why is
right.
he not married? What's he doing to screw up his relationships?
Exactly.
And, you know, it goes back to that old maid that line, you know, the story of that, and the always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Right.
And it puts this pressure on women, and once again, it ties into their behavior being policed, where they have to be this ultimate woman. You know, they have to be superwoman to land their husband. Like, they have to be able to cook. They have to be able to clean. They have to be able to take care of children. And now with attitudes on women in the workplace have become a little bit more liberal. Now they have to do all of that and then hold down a bomb gig. And
right.
And once again, if they don't, something's wrong with them.
It's ridiculous. Can I change gears a little bit? Not, you know,
sure.
I'm enjoying the conversation we're having, but there was something that I was thinking about, again, prepping for the show tonight that I wanted to touch on, get your feedback on.
Sure.
More about, you know, misogyny in general, as opposed to, you know, street catcalling and things like that. Where the real shame of it for me, as a person of color, you know, as a black person, where, you know, we're obviously as a group under significant oppression on a daily basis. And a huge amount of that oppression is economic oppression. And one of the stats that I had actually seen a few weeks ago when I was having a similar discussion in one of my groups, it was a stat where even though the planet as a whole is a patriarchy, and as you look at most groups, families, you know, along nationalities and even racial lines, most families on the planet are patriarchal. In America, black families are primarily matriarchal, you know, due again to the massive oppression that's going on for hundreds of years. We have a lot of families where, you know, the man is not available, the man is in jail, the relationship didn't work, and, you know, the way society is set up, you know, a lot of times as a woman, they will only help you, you know, with your raise your kids and help you provide sustenance and other assistance if you specifically don't have a man living with you. You know, it seems that if they really want to help the situation, they would be exactly the opposite. But, you know, it's led to this situation where for us, our families are led by women, and our women work more than any other demographic in the entire country. More black women are employed than any other demographic, yet they make the least. They have the least rewarding jobs, and the misogyny plays a large part in that. And it seems just as black men, we would step up, you know, to fight that battle, if only from an economic standpoint. I mean, our economic oppression is significant. I never have any discussion about racism or anything along those lines without discussing the economic disadvantage that our race has been put under for, you know, hundreds of years now, because it's a capitalist society as well. The whole entire world runs on money. So anything that attacks our ability to earn, anything that attacks our ability to build resources, we should all be up in arms about that. Meanwhile, as black men, you hardly ever see them complain about, you know, the ability of a black woman to earn, the ability of a black woman to advance, the ability of a black woman to attain higher levels of management, to attain ownership of companies. I mean, there've been some remarkable strides, but it still leaves us at a huge disadvantage when you add misogyny to racism. That 1-2 punch is just really, really tough for us. And if only for that reason, every black man should be on black women's side, because they are our leaders. You know, it wasn't even something we decided. It's the way that the world is for us. So we have to support our black women. It's in our own best interest as men to support right. black women. Yet somehow we never make this connection. No one ever even said, I never even hear all of the pundits and all the people kind of that call themselves at the forefront of you know, black communities, you know, whether it's a pastor or a politician or an activist. I rarely hear them make that point that if only for the sake of yourself, of your race, you should be supporting black women because they make all our money. And it's just a simple fact, but again, that's lost on us somehow. And again, that would be another message. It would be great for us to be able to get out there in a more powerful way.
Absolutely, I agree. I do feel like collectively, men aren't doing enough to speak up for our black women. I don't know about you, but I've read quite a few articles lately, especially with the police shootings of women of color and black women in particular, especially with the case of Sandra Bland, that there hasn't been much support. And, you know, and then you turn around and you look at situations where black men are under attack, and you go and you look at images and video of protest, and to me it always seems that the most present, the most fervent of protesters and supporters and activists and people who are speaking out are black women. And
right.
You know, there's a lot of talk that you see in social media about, you know, supporting the black family and advancing the black family and us moving forward. And we're leaving our women behind. We are not holding up our end of the bargain. We are, for lack of a better descriptor, failing.
Right.
And we can't continue to say, you know, there's an attack on our young black boys by the police, because it's not that anymore. It hasn't been that way for a long time. It's an attack on our young black people. They're killing women too. And they're not all, we have to stand up and fight for them. Like with the Fight for 15 movement, it baffles me that people don't realize that, you know, they don't put the dots together when they see that, you know, we are basically at the top of the list when it comes to things like poverty and living in impoverished areas. And so chances are we are occupying these jobs that are woefully underpaid.
Right.
And that movements like that would actually benefit us. You know, I mean, regardless of whether or not you think somebody flipping burgers at Wendy's or McDonald's or whatever doesn't deserve $15 because X job is getting paid peanuts as well, which in which case, then, okay, very well, then both of them should both get the pay bump, you know. We should be looking out. We should be staking our opportunities to jump into these movements and keep pushing, because we stand to benefit as well. And with black women not earning as much as not just white women, but Asian or Latino women, they stand to benefit as well. And the first thing we can do as men to close that gap, and as they say in the military, to stop dropping our packs and leaving them behind, is to just simply start speaking up. It's a very simplistic solution. All you have to do is talk. You don't even have to talk. You got Facebook, you got Twitter, you have Instagram, you have the whole of social media, the internet, and at your fingertips, the means to connect literally with the whole of the industrialized world and get the message out there. And, you know, okay, maybe you can't make it to a protest. Fine. Type a status. Type
right.
a tweet. Make a picture and post it on Instagram and talk about it. Don't just sit idly by and wonder what you can do, when the very least you can do is open your damn mouth.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. I know we're running short on time here. What effect or role, if you prefer, do you feel that not just modern media in general, but specifically rap music plays in a lot of the misogynistic views of black men? I mean, I'm a fan of rap music from a cultural perspective. Obviously, I've heard a lot of it with my life. I have a lot of favorites. But there's no denying that the majority of our rap music has at least some level of misogynistic undertones. They're not overt misogynistic messages. Sometimes the lyrics are just, I just can't even listen to them. And I understand how people listen to music, but a lot of times people are listening to the song without really deciphering the words or looking for any deeper meaning. But in general, do you feel that rap music has been a problem for us in combating misogyny? Do you feel that it, you know, makes it okay in the minds of some black men or men in general?
I think to a degree, yes. I mean, as much as I want to say, I'm not going to sit here. I'm definitely not going to sit here and say that rap music, you know, is definitely like causative in this whole scheme. But I think there is an influence of that. You know, like, there's a reason why our girls are trying to be these skinny size zero girls, and because, you know, that the magazines are putting that on their covers, these tiny small girls, you know, wearing these glamorous clothes. So they want to look like them. And I think, and to some extent, you know, just like we were talking about earlier with growing up, you know, men get told, you know, go after them, sow your wild oats. And, you know, women ain't nothing but trouble, stay away from them. Or, you know, they ain't good for nothing but sex. And then, so you have, you know, Uncle Ray Ray over here saying that to you, and you trust him. And then you have your favorite rapper saying the same thing. So, yeah, I think in a young man's mind, he could listen to that and go, okay, maybe there's some truth to this. And you know that confirmation bias kicks in, and, you know, you have that interaction with a girl who does something to you that you don't like, or that particular girl isn't a very bright girl, and you go, you know what? They were right. They were right.
Right. Or even, and sometimes a woman just tells you no, they'll extrapolate it.
Right. And some people don't know any better than to go, okay, well, Uncle Ray Ray said this, let's see what Aunt Sheila say about it. Or, you know, I'm gonna ask Aunt Sheila about this song from my favorite rapper and see what she thinks about it. And and even then, it's still not, you know, 100% foolproof plan, because Sheila could turn around and repeat the same misogynistic stuff, because she too has been conditioned.
Right.
So, and just like we have Uncle Tom's and Coons with topics of race, then you have misogynistas with topics related to sexism and misogyny.
Right.
And so I think there is a bit of influence. I'm not going to say that it's causative, but definitely there it feeds into this greater system that is designed to basically make sure that white men, white Christian men, especially here in America, stay on top.
Absolutely. And there's that song that's so popular now by Drake, Hotline Bling.
Right.
I can't even listen to it. It's so insulting to the woman he's talking about. And I know it's just a song and it's not, you know, meant to represent his life, but in general, I just can't understand the popularity of that song. It confuses me.
Yeah, I've heard the lyrics and I don't understand it either. But I mean, when you put something over a nice enough beat, people will keep on bobbing their head to it and keep on vibing. And maybe down the road they'll come to realize it. Like you see every now and then, and you might see like an article on BuzzFeed, and it's like, you know what? Now looking back on that song that was really hot in the 90s, that song really sucked. And you go, you know what? You're right. And by then, it's like too late, because since then, there's been thousands of songs that are doing the same thing, and they're just waiting for that decade mark to hit for somebody to go, you know what? Looking back, that really sucked. And I kind of had my little experience with that not very long ago. I went onto iTunes and got the greatest hits of DMX. And like, I was like, man, I listened to DMX in a long time. I'm ready to put it on my workout playlist and everything. And I'm traveling around listening to it, and like, it's not just misogynistic. It's homophobic. It's transphobic, and it's really violent. Like, some things are straight up alluded or full on just mentioned rape. as a weapon, and I was like, I can't do it.
Right.
I can't do it. But coming to the end of our show, would you like to give us some final thoughts, please?
Well, first, of course, thank you for having me on again. I really had a great time. I did want to mention I had a lot of trepidation about tackling this subject, as I realized we weren't going to be able to have any women on to give their side of it, or, you know, talk about their experiences. And just want to offer a quick apology in case I've said anything improper, or, you know, I just don't have the proper perspective, you know, obviously not being a woman to really fully address these issues. I mean, I think we discussed some good topics, but hopefully I didn't cross any unintentional line.
Absolutely. Same here. If there's anything that I said that was wrong, or maybe I unintentionally mansplained something, feel free to find me on social media, Rashad Blazer Pete, and let me know. Correct me.
Absolutely.
The only thing that we can do as allies is learn and continue to be, as a friend of mine says, hero support. You know, the sidekick. We just there to back you up and point us where you need us to go to help. But before we go, I'd just like to give you a quick note here. Since our last show on December 6th, 17 people have been killed by the police that have been reported, as per The Guardian. Since our last show, 17 people killed by police.
Unbelievable.
Yes. This is Rashad Blazer Pete and Khalil Haynes with Bars, the Black Atheist Radio Show. Until next time, stay black, keep pushing.